Midcast listeners, my name is Shelby Van Leuven, and today I'm here with Dr. Amy Weiser to talk a little bit about OB emergencies.
Hey Shelby, thanks for having me.
So first off, can you introduce yourself and your training and kind of what got you into family medicine and OB-GYN?
Yeah, so my name is Amy Weiser, and I am a mom, and I'm a wife, and I am a family medicine physician. Originally, I'm from Philadelphia and have steadily moved west through training, so now I live in Portland. Of course, stopped a few places in between, that educational circuit that we all know and love. Every 4 years, we move. So as far as education goes, I am an East Coaster. I went to Penn State for my undergraduate, and then for medical school, I went to MCP Hahnemann. I originally started med school thinking I was going to become a surgeon, like a hardcore badass. Can I say badass? Excellent. Good, because I just did a surgeon. So that was the plan. But like so many other things in life, plans are kind of loose guidelines. And during my clinical rotations, at the very end of my third year is when I discovered family medicine and fell in love with it and matched, did residency on the East Coast for 3 years. It was a 3-year program, and then moved to Washington, where I did a OB fellowship through University of Washington at Spokane. And after that, started our practice in Portland, or excuse me, in Oregon for 5 years, and then moved to Portland.
Oh, okay, very nice. So what are some of the reasons that you love working with OB patients? And you kind of mentioned before, but what are the specific OB trainings that you did to prepare yourself for this care?
Yeah, so within family medicine, we have a very full scope. And when I think of full scope in family medicine, my focus is on maternity care. So within every residency program, there are required rotations for OB. You'll be on the labor deck. You should be in a gyn clinic too, getting some exposure and experience. And during my training, I focus my elective time on getting more cases in the OR or deliveries. I was also, within my residency class, one of only a few who really wanted all the maternity that I could get. And so once that was established, my colleagues were very kind and gave me more opportunity. And then as far as my fellowship, when I came out of my residency, I knew that I wanted to work in a rural area. And with rural medicine, it's a little bit different than city medicine, but there is a lot of knowing your community, that continuity, that care with your patients, those relationships that build over time as you're seeing a person or a patient in front of you, and then as that person grows, and then a family grows. So that aspect within family medicine really drew me to the specialty and is what I love to do. In order to do that in a rural community where I was, or where I knew I wanted to be, at least before I ventured into academics, I had to think about resources and what that practice style would look like. In a lot of places out in rural America, there is not an OBGYN. It's a major issue with having providers available who can do emergency care, because sometimes in maternity, things just like life don't go as planned. There are some speed bumps along the way. So one of the things that I wanted to focus on was being able to, quote unquote, back myself up and doing a fellowship where I got surgical experience, worked more with high-risk OBs, worked closely with a MFM and maternal fetal medicine and obstetrical board-certified attendings during my fellowship. I got a lot of OR time, saw a lot of crazy things, which prepares you pretty well for a real practice when you don't have a whole team behind you.
Awesome. Thank you for explaining that. And so this is just kind of for, you know, all of us who are new here to medicine, but do you consider active labor to be an OB-GYN emergency, and what conditions are considered to be OB emergencies?
Well, I think that active labor is a very normal, natural process. In answer to your question, it's not an emergency until it is, which I think as a student or resident, probably some eye rolling is happening hearing me say that. But from an experienced provider, they might be shaking their heads up and down and agreeing with me. OB, maternity care, is a very dynamic process. So many things change within a short period of time, a long period of time, that whole gestation. But when it comes right down to it, you need to be very prepared for things to go a little off script. So there are complications that absolutely arise. It's why we take maternity care and delivering very seriously. I think that if you had to categorize where emergencies might lie, I would think about, you know, you have two patients. So I would think emergencies that apply to the baby or the fetus, to the mom, and then to both of them as one unit. So when you think about fetal or baby emergencies, a lot of times we think about their heart rate. During a labor process, one of the things that we do is we put mommies on the monitor. And what that means is that we're looking at their contraction pattern. We're also looking at baby's heart rate during the course of labor. And if that heart rate goes below a certain qualitative rate per minute, we get concerned. And there's all different ways of categorizing, you know, how severe is severe and when you need to just watchfully wait and when you need to make an intervention. When you have a significant fetal bradycardia, that heart rate drops and stays low, that is when we spring into action and we would very quickly have a woman be indicated for a cesarean section. You know, cesarean sections are one of the most commonly performed procedures in this country. We do them routinely. Our national rate is probably around 25% of all labors. We do think about repeat C-sections, moms who have already had babies via C-section, so that can definitely increase that rate a bit. But that's about the going rate. Some places are a little bit higher, some are a little bit lower. Most stories that you will hear probably include the reason that we went is because baby's heart rate went down and everyone got very upset and concerned. The other thing that maybe isn't as well known is that there can be maternal emergencies. I think one big genre of emergency is hemorrhage. Right. I think if you say hemorrhage to anyone in medicine, no matter what specialty, the hairs on the back of their neck should raise. They should get a little. That is an emergency, right? That blood is supposed to stay in the body and not be on the floor. So when we think about hemorrhage, we a lot of times for labor think about a postpartum hemorrhage. Postpartum hemorrhage happens after the delivery of the baby, usually after the delivery of the placenta. And it can be because that uterus that had a baby and the placenta and all the amniotic fluid all of a sudden needs to contract very quickly when all those things, well, leave the uterus. So tone of that uterine muscle is the majority of the etiology behind postpartum hemorrhage cases, probably about 70% of those cases. We also think about trauma too. We think about lacerations, tears. A lot of women will tear during labor. That cervix can tear and that can bleed a lot. Vaginal tears can bleed a lot too. We're always thoughtful about, is there anything left behind, i.e. a piece of placenta? That in and of itself can cause postpartum hemorrhage. And then we also think about, could there be a coagulopathy? You know, a lot of times patients who come into the hospital to deliver are usually young, they're usually fairly healthy. And so this can be a point of time in lives where new diagnoses are found. Luckily, this happens maybe about 1% of the time for all these postpartum hemorrhages. And then we think about blood pressure. Blood pressure is another form of an emergency. Gestational hypertension is getting more and more common in this country, and that can progress into preeclampsia. Preeclampsia in and of itself can just appear. We know that there's certain risk factors, but in a lot of cases, we don't know really why it's happening. That can have very significant effects. As mom's blood pressure gets exceptionally high, it can cause her compromise. eyes. Eventually, preeclampsia could lead to eclampsia, which are seizures, which is never good.
Yeah.
And as this is happening, you know, blood supply to baby is through the placenta. And as our resistance with high blood pressure changes that blood flow, it can be compromised. The other thing we think about for emergencies is kind of a mom and baby duo. What happens if mom's delivering and baby is partially out but not all the way out?
Yeah.
And dystocia is what we call it. And so I think there are, focusing on the emergencies and the kinds or groups that there are, these do happen. I think that for absolutely the majority of women who come in, labor does not turn into emergency, but these are all the things that we think about and can encounter.
Awesome. You just summed up Dev Achel for me.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So as a family medicine doctor who does OB care, do you only see quote-unquote emergency patients that you've seen previously in clinic, or is there a system in place amongst OB and family medicine physicians for, you know, who sees what patient in the emergency setting?
Yeah. So emergencies, of course, are not predictable. It'd be mm-hmm. great if they gave us forewarning, but they don't. Here at the university, we have a tremendous OB and MFM team who have very qualified residents and attendings in-house 24 hours a day. For our family medicine, we have residents who are in-house 24 hours a day, attendings who are typically in during daytime hours, but not necessarily at nighttime. Most emergencies, it seems, happen in the middle of the night. So I'd be one of the providers that would get called in because I can do C-sections. But, you know, emergency situations usually can't wait. Our goal for very urgent cases is to deliver the baby really within 10 minutes. And so that is a very quick turnaround time. So our OB colleagues are amazing. They take care of our family medicine patients in emergency situation where we're not available or those with level training needed are not available. They also cover our midwifery patients as well. And so we have a wonderful, very cooperative relationship, one that you don't see all over the place. And so we're very grateful here.
Okay. So kind of along the same lines you were talking about, it's a pretty quick turnaround. So mm-hmm. the patient presents to the emergency room and they're deemed in labor. What's kind of the process that they go through? Do they ever stay in the ED for extended amounts of time? Or they're directly admitted? Can you kind of describe that?
Yeah, there's definitely workflows in place in all ERs. They might be a little bit different depending on where you are. But typically we think about anyone who is further along than 20 weeks gestation kind of has a fast pass out of the ER and goes up to the maternity or OB floor. Of course, at that point in time, there can be some nuances to their care and diagnosis. And so moving just like you would move a cardiac patient from the ER to the cath lab for further workup and evaluation. Our maternity patients, our pregnant patients also go up to labor and delivery. Within the ER, though, they do a lot. Sometimes people come in very active labor and they will deliver in the ER. There's no time mm-hmm. to get them anywhere else. So our emergency medicine colleagues are very versed with labor. They see a lot of our preeclamptic patients who come into the ER up to 6 weeks after they have their babies with an onset of preeclampsia. Likewise, a lot of women who are having miscarriages will hit the ER for evaluation first. So they do an awful lot.
Awesome. Okay, so this kind of goes back to something you were talking about earlier about the skill set. So what skill sets have you learned, you know, either through training or just through experiences that have helped you learn to adapt to the emergency OB situation? If you have any interesting stories, feel free to share. But
well, I think that, you know, in medicine, you're always learning, and you're learning by and from your patients that you see. So there is a continuum there. I think that being prepared as much as you can be is ideal. And along with training and then clinical experience, there are things out there to help you. One is advanced life support in obstetrics. It's called also, it's akin to ACLS, ATLS. It's a specific, you know, when emergencies happen, how do you respond? So having an algorithm to follow, I've been lucky enough to be instructor for this course. It's a national course. I've actually been certified in it since I was a resident. Things like that help you with muscle memory, with, okay, I do this, then that, so there's mnemonics involved, and that can be really helpful, you know, just being prepared, and then if you have to enact any of these algorithms to know what they are.
So this is a question I didn't give to you earlier, so I apologize
for
that. But I was just wondering what you think that medical students, you know, who are on their rotation or maybe during doing preceptorship kind of in an OB setting, what things that they could do that would be most helpful for their attending, most helpful to the patient, perhaps even calming or alleviating patient family concerns and things like that.
So getting to know maternity patients in the clinic, definitely use this as an opportunity to ask questions and learn more about them. How does pregnancy feel? If you've never been pregnant yourself, it's a great opportunity, and our patients understand that this is a learning environment, and they like the extra attention and time that our students share. And then be interested. Ask questions with your preceptor and try to stay involved. On labor and delivery, it can be a little bit more challenging. A lot of things are happening at once, a lot of moving pieces. It can be very overwhelming, that and, you know, being plunked down into a situation where you may have never been in before. How do you react? What is your role? But make sure you're talking with your residents, with your attendings, those around you, even if it's just observational, right? Be in the room, be an extra set of hands as it's needed, and do reading. A lot of times there'll be a commotion of activity and then maybe a moment to catch your breath. Even if it's a little blurb online and up to date or in a solid OBGYN text, take those moments and ask questions.
Awesome. So switching gears, this is one of the questions why I originally was thinking of this topic was, have you ever been in a situation, you know, out in public or just somewhere not in the hospital where you've had to deal with an OB emergency? Or do you know of a colleague who has had a similar experience?
So I was given thought to this. I think a lot of my emergent situations, you know, have been more medicine patients doing CPR kind of a rapid response, more so running ACLS as much as you can when you're out in the non-hospital world. As far as emergency OB situations, I'm going to knock on wood, that hasn't actually happened to me. Of course, I have had some friends who are paramedics, and they've delivered babies in the field. So not in a literal field, but in, you know, the medical. I worked rurally, but it wasn't that rural, I guess. And so they have more stories about precipitous deliveries, which happen very quickly. They can be at risk for postpartum hemorrhage as well. So I myself don't have any great stories to share.
What kind of conditions would, you know, cause like an early kind of delivery or the quick delivery that you were discussing?
I think the first one that we think of, if mom has had babies before. So if we've had successful vaginal deliveries before, typically after your first baby, typically I would say it's not all the time, it's not a rule. Babies don't read a textbook, but typically a second or third baby can come a little bit faster. Your body has gone through that hormonal cascade. Your, the birth canal has proved itself patent, and that can accommodate a baby. Other times there's a lot of preterm deliveries that occur, and we don't really have a great understanding. Lots of theories include infection, possibly the anatomy of the uterus itself, but really those are very case specific.
And so a last question for this podcast is, I know you've done work in other parts of the world, and so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about OB-GYN care and OB emergencies and what those look like in those places and how those are dealt with.
Yeah, So as far as international travel, most recently I went to West Africa. Now it's 2 years ago, but in the country of the Gambia, where I was, there really are very few and far between OBGYNs, which I think is very common in low, middle income developing countries. Their resources are definitely not what we have, what we're used to. I think that there are a lot of lay midwives that do the majority of deliveries. We think about accessibility, we think about cost, and in general resources. Where would you go if you were in this area? The hospitals or institutions are not as common to come across. There's more geographical distance, and transportation can become a huge barrier to hospitalized care. So I think that those factors definitely are a strong contrast from what you and I would be used to here. There have been many different programs, WHO, UN Family Planning, as well as I mentioned that also course, there's a global or international also. And so work has been done to try to prepare those who are attending births in a rural community or in a very low resource community to try to think about what are the risk factors for hemorrhage, and then how can it be identified, and some medications that are fairly cheap, very affordable, that can also be supplied as a at least first line to try to decrease some mortality rates. Mortality rates, maternal and fetal mortality rates are, and as well as infant, are huge worldwide. It's something that we actually have a very high maternal and fetal as well as infant mortality rate in this country for being a developed country. And it's something that a lot of time and effort is being put into to figure out how can we improve this. But in lower resourced areas, this is very real. A lot of women die in childbirth and a lot of babies die as well. And so I think that education in different forms can be very helpful. OB emergencies in some of those situations will end in mortality. There just really isn't a way to escape that. GYN cancers are also very prominent as well. So in general, women's health-related illnesses can lead to a high rate of morbidity and mortality. But we're trying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for everything you've had to share. And I want to thank our eMedCast listeners for tuning in. Stay tuned for the next episode in a couple weeks. Thanks so much.